Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, if the warm weather has you kicking off your shoes and walking barefoot, or wearing lightweight footwear like flip-flops, it may feel good, but you may be putting your feet, ankles, and toes at risk. We'll find the right fit for summer foot health and safety from a renowned foot surgeon.
But first, think back to your last doctor's appointment. How did it go? Even the most well-intentioned physician faces increasing pressure to keep the visit short. You might have felt the doctor didn't listen, you were rushed, and your questions weren't answered. Yet doctor-patient contact time is key to avoiding misdiagnosis and unnecessary testing. Studies show that more than 80% of diagnoses can be made based on the patient's history alone. Yet on average, a doctor interrupts a patient at 8 seconds.
So how can you get your doctor to listen? Our next guest has the inside scoop. She literally wrote the book on the topic, and she's a physician. Dr. Lena Wen is the co-author of When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests. She's also a Rhodes Scholar, a clinical fellow at Harvard, and senior resident at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Massachusetts General Hospital, both in Boston. Hello, Dr. Wen. Thank you so much for joining us on Take Care.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Dr. Wen, most of us have been patients and are patients. Many of us have had a frustrating experience with a healthcare provider at one time or another. What inspired you to write this book? Was it your experience as an emergency room physician or something more personal?
It was both. As an emergency physician, I see so many patients coming in who are not satisfied by the care that they're getting. But for me, it was a personal experience that specifically inspired this. When I was a medical student, my mother was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer after nearly a year of misdiagnoses. And in that process, I saw how disconnected patients have become from their own medical care. And despite the best intentions from doctors and nurses and the medical system, patients don't feel like they're being listened to and aren't getting the right medical care for them.
What do you think that patients can do differently to try to get a better outcome? Because it's very intimidating when we enter the environment, even starting with the first person you may see. And then a patient might feel that they're in a subservient position. I just feel that a lot of people can relate to the fact that when you're in the situation, it's not always as easy as you hope it would be to really advocate for yourself. So what is your advice to patients to help overcome that thinking?
You're entirely right that when you're the patient, you already don't feel well. Even if you just have a cold, you're already feeling run down and tired and not feeling like that's the time to learn how to advocate for yourself. And also there is this mentality between patients and doctors that the doctor's almost like your parent, that if the doctor says, take this medication, you say, sure. And so that's why I emphasize that it's so important to practice your patient advocacy in advance and to know the pressures on doctors, not saying that the healthcare system is perfect and that the way that medicine is perfect, but to say that we understand that there are certain limitations of our healthcare system. So here's how to work around it, and here's how I can practice ahead of time to be my best advocate.
In your book, you are very clear about certain things, and you fundamentally take us behind the scenes as to what a doctor is facing, what you're learning in medical school. And one of the terms you brought up that I had not heard before was you refer to cookbook medicine. What do you mean by that, and why is that a problem in reaching a diagnosis?
A lot of patients think that if their doctor asks them a lot of questions, that that's a good thing. So you have chest pain and the doctor says, oh, well, when did it start? How bad is this chest pain? And then ends up doing a lot of tests, which patients also think, well, maybe this is a good thing that I'm getting all these tests done. But actually be careful when you feel like you're being led down these pathways, because you should be treated as an individual. Just because you have chest pain doesn't mean that you should be treated the same way as everyone else who comes in with that same symptom. So that's why you should look for these warning signs in advance of being put down these pathways that are actually cookbook recipes rather than that's tailored to your individual illness.
In the book, you tell us about Jerry, and you use his case to illustrate how a doctor might miss the big picture by focusing on one or two symptoms, and then there's what you refer to as diagnostic momentum. You're kind of led down that path, and that's not always in your best interest. Besides, it costs a lot of money, and it also might put patients through unnecessary tests. So why don't you just tell us briefly about Jerry and what wound up happening?
So Jerry was a 40-something-year-old man, mechanic in Boston, who came to his doctor because of chest pain. But actually, the chest pain wasn't really chest pain. It was that he had been moving boxes over the weekend, helping his brother move, and was sore in his legs and his arms, but also in his chest and his back. When he went to his doctor, though, the doctor heard the keyword chest pain and said, oh my goodness, you have to go to the ER to get checked out. And in the ER, because he had chest pain, the nurses drew his blood and did EKGs and chest x-rays. He had to stay overnight and get repeat of these tests done and run on a treadmill in the morning, only to be told at the end, congratulations, you don't have a heart attack, you don't have pneumonia, you have chest pain. But just being told that you have the same symptom that you came in with isn't helpful because you don't actually know your diagnosis. You have no idea how you're going to get better, and you feel like you're not being listened to because you got treated the same way as every patient, not based on your individual story and on why you came to the doctor in the first place.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're joined today by an author and a physician, Dr. Lena Wen, who wrote the book When Doctors Don't Listen. We're talking about Jerry, who came to the ER with chest pain. And while I was reading that, it occurred to me that both patients and doctors might have a different risk threshold. Now, if that were me, and even though I moved a bunch of cartons the day before, if somebody suggested, well, it could be that, or it could be a heart attack, and here's what I recommend you do, I don't think I would have it in me to say, I'm not going to get the treadmill test or, you know, the echocardiogram, in case I'm the one out of 1 million that it really was a heart attack. And a doctor might be the same. What do you think of that?
There have been many studies done that show that people, whether they're doctors or patients, have different risk tolerances. So some people will say, well, I don't want to stay in the hospital overnight, even if there's a 5% chance that I could die of a heart attack. And there are some people who say, even if it's 1 in 10 million, I want to be absolutely sure. My point is that it should be the patient's choice. So often patients are just told, you have to stay overnight. We have to do these tests to rule out a heart attack. But they're not told, what is the likelihood that they actually have a heart attack? And also, what are the actual alternatives of what they may have? So instead of being told that Jerry has chest pain, perhaps he could be told, we most likely think that you have a strain in the muscles in your chest. And to be absolutely sure, we could keep you here for some tests, but it's 99% sure that this is a muscle strain. Perhaps that could then help empower Jerry to make a better decision that suits him.
In your book, you concretely take us through what patients can be doing to better advocate for themselves, and you list 8 pillars to better diagnosis. The first pillar is tell your whole story. We don't have time to go through all 8 pillars, but telling your story is really critical as you see it. Why is this so important?
We know that 80% of diagnoses can be made just based on your history alone. That means that your story is the key to your diagnosis. And actually, that's better than any test or combination of tests that are out there. And yet, so many patients believe that they should tell their symptoms and not their story. So they'll tell their doctor something like, oh, I have chest pain, headache, and nausea. And then their doctor is then forced to go down these pathways of thinking through what caused their chest pain, what caused their headache, what caused their nausea. But what if the patient instead said, I experienced sharp chest pains when I was walking. I stopped, I took a nitroglycerin pill, and that gave me a headache. Then I became nauseous and I had to sit down. I mean, that would tell the doctor a lot more than just stating the symptoms alone. And yet that's not something that most people realize that they have to practice in advance of going to their doctor. You have to think through your story, write down your story and practice it, because we know that doctors interrupt patients in less than 10 seconds. So if you only have 10 seconds to tell that compelling story, you really have to practice it and get the high impact part of the story out in advance.
So what you're saying is the context of how the symptoms appear is critical, and we're not doing that well.
Imagine that you haven't seen an old high school friend for a while and you run into them on the street. You would probably ask them something like, oh, how are you? How have things been? You wouldn't ask them yes-no questions. And yet, if you are a patient and you tell your doctor a symptom, they're going to ask you yes-no questions. So the best way to prevent that is exactly as you said, to add the context and to say, this is what I was doing when this started, and put this in the context of your life so that the doctor has a better understanding of what it is that you do and what it is that actually happened that got you there in the first place.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Reff.
And we're talking with Dr. Lena Wen, who has co-authored the book, When Doctors Don't Listen. You mentioned that a lot of medical practice is based on lists and algorithms that doctors follow. And, you know, we all come in contact with algorithms every day. We Google things, and that's how results are returned to us. Is that similar to how algorithms play a role in doctors diagnosing issues, patient problems?
So yes and no. Algorithms and checklists aren't bad in and of themselves. If I were going to have surgery done, I would want to make sure that everyone follows a checklist to make sure there are no sponges left in my body, that everyone washes their hands. There is a role, a very big role actually, for checklists and algorithms in medicine. The problem is if these are used for diagnoses, because diagnoses are complicated. They're based on your story, which is not the same as someone else's story of their illness. And you can imagine if you type your symptoms into Google, as you were mentioning, you'll get all kinds of things. If you type in abdominal pain, you might find out that you're a guy, and one of the possibilities is you're pregnant. I mean, there could be so many mistakes made if you simply use algorithms in the process. And so that's why I emphasize that when it comes to diagnosis, that personalizing that diagnosis to your story and making sure your doctor really listens to your story is the key to getting good medical care.
Dr. Wen, do you think the threat of medical malpractice just hangs over doctors now more than ever, and that's why they feel so compelled to follow along those lists and just check things off just to make sure they're covering themselves?
I do think that medical malpractice plays a big role. I'm an emergency physician, and my field is the field with many malpractice suits. And I certainly understand that this is something that people fear. However, I don't think that this is a good place to be, where doctors are so afraid of our patients that we don't trust our patients to partner to get their care. And that's why I emphasize that the best way for patients to get good medical care is to say to their doctor, look, I'm the expert when it comes to my body. You're the expert when it comes to medicine. So let's work together to partner to get the best medical care for me. And that then takes some of the responsibility off of the doctor and in terms of their fear of malpractice, and also ensures that the patient becomes an advocate for their health.
Are current medical students being taught to be better listeners? Is this seen as a priority in their teaching?
So I started medical school in 2001, and at that time, our medical curriculum was filled with science and technology, and there is so much to learn and so much science and technology to absorb in 4 short years of a medical school. Now there is more attention to the art of medicine than ever before, but this is still an area that we have to do a better job at, because being a healer and being a physician takes far more than understanding algorithms and science. It also takes the understanding of how to listen, how to empathize, and how to really be with a patient.
So what has the reaction been to your book in the medical community? Now, not your colleagues that are your friends, but in general, because I can imagine some people might think this is idealistic. We may all hope that this can really occur, but I wondered if you've gotten any pushback in the medical community.
I have to say, when I first wrote the book, I was terrified. I thought that maybe I was going to get fired, that I would be ostracized among my peers. And actually, the response I've gotten has been surprising because there is a sense of relief by doctors who read this book. And that's because we all went into medicine because we want to be partners with our patients. Nobody went to medical school or nursing school or health professional school of any kind so that we could practice cookbook medicine, right? That's not, we're all well-intentioned. We all went into this field because we really want to help people. And yet the pressures on doctors' time and malpractice pressures and all these other systems issues have made it such that patients have become almost our adversaries and we become afraid of our patients. And this book empowers patients to once again take this equal role. And again, doctors are relieved by this, by the idea that we could make the kind of difference in our patients' lives that we went into medicine to do.
The book is When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests. And our guest today, Lena Wen, thank you so very much for joining us on Take Care.
Thank you, Linda, Lorraine. It's been a pleasure to talk to you about empowering people to better health.
Dr. Lena Wen is the co-author of When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests. For more information on Dr. Wen and her book, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show.
Coming up, how the wrong choice in summer footwear can lead to ankle sprains, broken toes, and even back pain. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.